YouTube. There you are. I'm on TikTok right now, and I'm looking down at this screen, and I'm looking up here. So I need to remember that y'all are here. People who are coming to YouTube to watch this show. Happy Halloween to you. It's near there, I think, right now. I mean, it's like, what, the 23rd? And then by the time the audio version goes up, it'll be like the 27th? So we're getting very close. It's getting very scary. I'm spooked. I don't know about you guys, but I am spooked for the holiday. Sufficiently. I am trembling, as it were. Hi, it's People Pleaser. It's the latest episode. It's just me today. I just got back. I got some spooky stuff to talk about. I want to talk about some spooky stuff, but I just got back from Big Sur, where I did a meditation and yoga retreat, which sounds really lovely, but for me, with panic disorder, anything can be scary. That's the fun thing about panic disorder, is like, it's not just this time of year when I'm watching scary movies at the movie theater and on TV, and everyone's dressing up in scary costumes, and there's scary pumpkins all around that I get scared. I can get scared any old time, even by stuff that's not scary. And that's really the joy and the beauty of panic disorder, especially if you're a person who enjoys getting a little spooked, which I do. I do like scary movies, and it's just funny when I'm like driving up to a really beautiful resort, this really gorgeous place called the Esalen Institute, and I start feeling like I'm gonna have a panic attack just because I'm like worried that I'm gonna take a yoga class that's gonna be too hard for me or something, and it's gonna be embarrassing, and I'm preemptively nervous about that, or that I'm gonna be like in a guided meditation session and it's going to be an hour long and I'm not used to meditating for that long and I'm going to like have a mental breakdown or something in that hour. So something that's supposed to be very relaxing and lovely can cause me panic because I'll figure out a way to make it scary. I'll figure out a way. I just will. That's just how it works. It wasn't scary is the thing. It actually turned out to be a lovely weekend, which I also expected. That's the other thing about having panic disorder, is like, I get scared, but I know I'm going to be okay. You know, like I've been through this enough times to know that, and we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, that like the journey with anxiety this year has gone from figuring out I'm so tired of this anxiety. It's so debilitating. And it's so, I'm tired of it just working its way into my everyday. And I was looking for, and had been looking for most of my life, a solution to end it once and for all, to make my anxiety go away, to make my fear go away. And the reframe that happened this year, we talked about this on the show already, is I realized that doesn't make sense. I can't get rid of fear. So I need to learn how to sit in fear and how to allow fear and how to accept fear and how to accept anxiety and how to like sort of ride through it and just sort of be in the unceasing dance of fear, uncertainty, joy, ecstasy, anxiety, fear, worry, boredom, you know, all just the emotional ride and how to just sit in it and accept it and be with it. And I thought that that's what I was going to do on this retreat. Like I went there with the intention of like, well, I'm a little uncomfortable. There's some naked baths there. That was another thing. So like, I'm uncomfortable that like, I don't like doing yoga classes in front of other people because they always say that they're going to be easy. And then they're always harder for me than they are for anyone else in the room because I have the world's tightest hamstrings and the world's most fragile lower back. And even, I mean, like there'll be people twice my age in there who are making the easy moves look easy like they should be, and I'm struggling through them. So I was nervous about the yoga classes. I was nervous about the guided meditation, because sometimes guided meditation, I'm like, I just need to sort of be in my own space of having my mind wander off and coming back to breath. And sometimes when there's a person who's like telling me what I should be focusing on, it's more stressful than I want it to be. And especially if it was going to be a big, long session. And I'm also nervous because there's this area where I really want to go. There's a hot spring at this place, but it says clothing optional. But you know what that means? It means get naked. That's what that means. All right. And I want to be naked in this hot spring. I want to be, because even though it's like clothing optional and to your comfort level, here's what happens when somebody decides to wear a swimsuit in there, is first of all, 98% of the people in there are rocking it naked, all right? Doesn't matter what their body type is, doesn't matter what their age is, doesn't matter, like, everybody's in there naked. So when you're the person who walks in a swimsuit, you're announcing to the area full of bathing naked people that you're uncomfortable with nudity. Even though it's your own personal nudity, you're like, I'm uncomfortable with the nudity, which makes everyone else feel like, oh, am I making you uncomfortable now because I'm nude? Even though everyone else here is nude, and like, are you uncomfortable with the fact that I'm naked? Is that making you uncomfortable because you're wearing the swimsuit? I'm seeing that. It's making me feel like, oh, you don't like the nudity. I don't want to oppress you with my nudity, but I also wanted, because here's the thing. I did it. It's uncomfortable. I walked into this space and everyone was naked. And I was like, oh, it's just everyone's naked in here. And I slowly began to disrobe. And I have this feeling of like, of course, being embarrassed. Of course, I'm embarrassed. Of course, I fear that everyone's going to like look at my weenie and judge it. Instantly, I'm going to take my pants off and everyone in there is going to go like, look at that guy's wiener. And I don't know what it is that particularly that's wrong with it. I just feel like they're going to see something. They're going to be like, that's not a normal wiener. And I have no reason for thinking that that's going to happen. Because first of all, nobody's wiener's like stopping the show. Nobody's getting undressed and everyone's like, that's a nice wiener. No one cares because they're all kind of not great looking. And they're all just sort of hanging there and like that, and it's fine. And once you see it, you're like, yeah, it's just, I've seen one of those before. Everyone's seen one before and there's nothing special about it. But I have in my head, like, not mine though. When my wiener comes out, it's going to be a problem. Everyone's going to look at it and go, I can't believe he had the audacity to come in here with that MF thing. And I don't know why I think that, because it's a normal wiener. Let me just say that. Okay. I don't know how many times I can talk about my wiener on YouTube or on TikTok for that matter before I get banned. We'll see. But it's in the context of just talking about this retreat that I went to. And here's the other thing is like, no one's looking at any other person for longer than like half a second. If you look at anyone else for longer than a second, it's inappropriate. It's inappropriate to like look at someone and then like up and down their body and stay with eye contact locked. The most you can do is a quick glance. Is like, oop, that person entered my field of vision and I quick glanced and I saw it all real quick. My body scanned the whole thing and I'm going to respectfully look at something else now. I'm going to look away. And that's what everyone's doing. Everyone's doing that respectfully. And this again is like the swimsuit thing. I do respect that it is clothing optional and that people have the option to wear a swimsuit, but I also respect that like the whole purpose of this place is to step out of your comfort zone and to like trust people and trust sacred spaces and like to trust that it's okay for you to be vulnerable, even in front of complete strangers, and like that it would be so weird if in that space some kind of inappropriate judgment came your way or inappropriate contact came your way. It would be so bizarre and out of place. And of course that didn't happen. I don't know if it's never happened in the history of that place, but I feel like it's an understanding of the people there that it's like, we're not here to do that. There's nothing sexual about this disrobing and this nudity. It honestly felt when I entered and left that space, like I had entered and left like a temple. Like it felt very, very sacred. And once I got past my initial discomfort and just eased into the water and minded my own business and got into my own practice and my own meditation and just sort of looked out at the water and out at the ocean, because this whole entire place, by the way, is just precariously, the whole entire property of this institute is precariously perched on this cliff, and it's all just looking over the Pacific Ocean, and just at the edge of the property going all the way down is just on the edge looking straight down into the ocean. And it's like, I mean, I'd say the thing is like 500 feet wide, and then it's, you know, probably like a half a mile long, but it's not, I mean, it's just this long, narrow strip of land, between the highway and the ocean, precariously perched atop this cliff. And beautiful. But yeah, the baths are also just right nestled up against the ocean, so you can be in a bath and looking out over the ocean. It's really, really amazing. People are asking on TikTok, Esalen. It is Esalen. It is. Someone said Esalone. Nope, it's not Esalone. It's not Esalone. It's not that. Someone else said Esalen, Essalen. It's not that either. It's Esalen. Let's get it right. Okay. Fantastic. I recommend it. Recommend it. But here's the observation I wanted to share before we get into the spooky stuff. So already we talked about it's spooky for me because I have panic disorder and everything's spooky for me. But here's my observation. When I go into places like this, I sometimes have an expectation that I'm going to have some kind of grand sweeping experience that lifts me off of my feet and that pulls me out of my body in a really profound way that makes me cry and makes me tremble and makes me see the world instantly in a new way. Kind of like the experience I had with my sister-in-law when I did the cord cutting ceremony, another thing that we've discussed on this podcast. But it doesn't always work that way. It sometimes the lesson is more subtle. And I went to this space sort of on the lookout for, like, when is my big moment going to happen? When is the big moment of clarity going to happen? And I realized at some point, probably midway through the second day, that it was like, I think that on this trip, what I'm being called to do and what I feel like I'm being asked to do is to just slow down and just try to enjoy this place, not grab the place by the collar and go, what do you have to teach me? What am I supposed to be learning here? But instead just be here. I had a goal of not working while I was there. I did pretty solid on that. I think I answered like one work email because I had to. It was very pressing. But like, other than that, I didn't work. It because the place is not very large, like you can walk from one end of the place to the other in 15 minutes. It's not like there's just this huge property to explore and more and more and more stuff to see. You can kind of see it all. It like walking from one end to the other and back and exploring, you can kind of see the whole property in like 45 minutes. So once I'd seen everything and seen all the different views and seen all the beautiful stuff that's on the property, it's just sort of like, okay, well now I have nothing but just time in the day to fill however I choose. And there's sort of this feeling constantly of like, well, I have to make the most of this. I have to make use of it. I have to make this count. Again, I have to find my moment. I have to find my big white light, powerful moment here. And more and more and more, it was like, no, just slow down, just slow down. So the lesson was more subtle this weekend, but it's one that I think I need to learn, because as this process has been occurring throughout this year that we've been discussing on this podcast of trying to learn how to be in discomfort, how to consciously put myself in uncomfortable situations and sit in the discomfort, how to be in fear and move through it and not run from it. I think the focus can become so focused on dealing with discomfort that it becomes almost like my mind now thinks that my experience as a conscious being is solely about being uncomfortable and learning how to navigate that discomfort. And that's not true. Like, discomfort is a regular, recurring part of my experience, but it's not the only part of my experience. So I've put all of this focus on learning how to deal with discomfort. And this weekend seemed to be telling me, I also want you to learn how to just slow down sometimes and just enjoy stuff and see if you can just for 48-ish hours, just try to enjoy this place. It's just a lovely place. It's unspeakably beautiful. Everyone here is lovely. The food is great. There's some wonderful hot springs down there that you can sit in with a bunch of naked people who aren't going to judge your wiener. Just see if you can enjoy that, you know? And I think I did okay. And that was a nice lesson. And I like that the lesson was more subtle. But there's one other observation that I had at one point while I was meditating in a tub watching the ocean. And the ocean's always a great place for me to meditate because I do like to think of my thoughts and my emotional states like waves, and how the ocean is just this never-ending process of like waves coming in and the water coming in strong and retreating and coming in and retreating. And it's a great visualization for me when I'm meditating to try to see my mind as that it's just this, it's never stopping, and it's futile to try to stop it, to try to build a wall to stop the moving of the tide. You can't. It's constantly in motion. It's been in motion long before I was ever born, and it will continue to be in motion long after I'm gone. And it's always in flow, and that's how my emotional states are. But I saw something, a visual representation, that I was like, that is exactly what anxiety looks like. Because I was watching kind of the way a surfer does, or one does when they're out body surfing or boogie boarding or swimming in the ocean. You're watching for the waves and trying to wait for like a larger one that you can catch, because the larger ones come like every 5 or 6 waves. You know, there's a constant flow of waves into the shore, but every fifth or sixth wave will you can see it coming from a ways off, that it's building momentum and it's growing, and it's, you know, the tide that's coming backwards, the riptide that's pulling backwards, is shaping a larger crest that you're like, okay, this one's big. And I thought, that's sort of how anxiety comes up, is I see a thing that's coming up in my future, whether it's a lovely retreat to Big Sur that should be fun, but I see it looming in the future. Or like tomorrow, I have to fly. We know I don't like flying. I have to fly to Omaha tomorrow. And as soon as I knew I had to fly to Omaha, I started seeing that wave coming. I was, oh, there's my wave. Here it comes. And I'm waiting for this wave, and I can see it looming and gaining speed and gaining momentum and gaining size. Avoiding it is not an option. It's going to come and it's going to crash. But I was watching these rocks, these giant rocks in Big Sur that are at the shore. There's all these huge, massive jutting rocks that are popping out of the water everywhere. And so many of these big, scary, massive waves were breaking on these rocks. And I started thinking, okay, be like the rock. You got to be like the rock. You got to watch that thing grow and come. And it's okay. You can acknowledge that it looks intimidating and it looks like it's building a lot of force and it's carrying the force of the entirety of the Pacific Ocean behind it. That's this massive behemoth. And here it comes, and it's moving in at a ferocious speed, and it's gaining speed, and it's gaining size, and it's gaining strength. But the rock doesn't move. The rock just stands there, and then the water breaks over the rock and it makes this big fucking fancy show. And this is kind of like the event horizon. This is kind of like what's going to happen as I'm going through security and as I'm boarding the plane tomorrow. It's going to be the breaking of the wave on me, and it's going to be the height of the fear and the anxiety. And I just already know that this is going to happen, because it just is how it always goes. But I don't need to retreat in that moment. I can be the rock and just let that big splash break over me, let it make a big show, and then it will just, like it always does, subside and retreat. And then there will be a continual kind of splashing against me, but it'll be 5 or 6 more, where there'll be, you know, kind of like a peaceful moment between that, and I can sit in that and just sort of let it be transient. So that's metaphor number one. I think it's pretty decent, but there's a second way to be. There's two options. So the rock is it's kind of an aggressive approach. It's like, I'm going to stand here in the face of this thing, and I'm going to take the full breaking of that wave, the full force of right where that wave wants to break, right on my face, and I'm going to stand strong in it. I'm going to stand strong and let it break on my face. But that's if I'm there. That's where I'm standing, is right at the shore, right where the waves break. I don't necessarily need to be right there. I can move deeper into the water if I want, which is also scary, because the deeper you move in, the harder it is to see what's beneath you and what could potentially grab you. So I could move deeper into myself, deeper into the psyche, deeper into my healing practice. And there's also in Big Sur these giant fields of kelp and seaweed that like the heads of them are all sticking out of the water, and there's just these fields of them. And those are about, you know, 50 yards beyond where the rocks are and where the waves are breaking. And they're also bobbing up and down and flowing with this never-ending ceaseless motion of the waves, but they're not where the waves are breaking. Like, the wave is moving through them, but they are more fluid and they're more a part of it. So this is almost like, I feel like right now I'm the rock. I'm like realizing like, okay, I can stand here and I can take it and I can deal with it and I can let this thing break over me. I wonder if I can make a goal to try to be more like the kelp, to go deeper and to flow with it rather than always being right in the space where it's breaking. If that makes sense. And I'll report back to you if I figure out how to do that. Okay, that's my my little moment of like maybe something nice to chew on before we get into the scary stuff. Somebody asked on TikTok, is this filibuster? Basically, I was just filibustering until I got to the main meat of the show, which is Satanic Panic is back, folks. Ooh, it's back as if it ever left. But, you know, I don't know if it's midterms coming up or what it is, or if it's just that time of year, but conservative Christians are all back up in their bullshit about Satan right now. And I thought it'd be fun to just sort of talk a little bit about the Dark Lord and about the fallen angel, Lucifer. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard these stories. One of my favorites was the one that went viral on the internet of the mom who was freaking out about Hocus Pocus being on in the room. She left the room. She left her kids alone with Disney Plus, thinking, I can trust Disney Plus. Disney Plus doesn't have any inappropriate content. And she came back in, and to her horror, her children were watching Hocus Pocus 2 on TV. And I mean, this video is, it feels like satire. It feels like a joke because this woman is so silly. She says multiple times, and again, this isn't satire. I need to emphasize that. But she does say multiple times that these witches were coming on her TV, and that Bette Midler, I think she says the sentence like, so there you are, and Bette Midler's coming on your TV and coming on your kids, and I don't want Bette Midler coming on my kids. She says like coming on in this context of like coming on my TV and coming on my kids multiple times. And that makes me really happy, and I'm glad that she says that with that phrasing. It's great. But I don't think that she's aware of what she's saying, but it's darn perfect. It's just about darn perfect that she actually says, I don't want Bette Midler coming on my kids. Cause that's fair. Like, I don't necessarily want Bette Midler coming on my kids either. I don't think anyone does, but she's talking specifically about Bette Midler's, satanic worship and her Bette Midler's promotion of Satanism and satanic rituals through her film Hocus Pocus 2, which is just great that there are people who genuinely think that we should, with all the things happening in the world, climate change, looming nuclear war, the thing we got to worry about is Hocus Pocus 2. And then the other one that was really great is this mural that this kid painted. This Michigan student painted a mural, and the parents freaked out, saying that it had satanic imagery in it and that it was full of Satanism, because there's like a couple symbols on this mural. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like painted lime green, and there's a bunch of characters all over it. And the main message in the middle of the mural is this globe that these two characters are holding, these two like superheroes are holding, and it says, stay healthy. And it's all about like health, and it's all about intersectionality and the diversity of the school. And the parents freaked out because there's like one little image of like a devil guy who the person who drew the mural said, oh, that's a character from a video game, like a popular video game that the kids at the school like. And then there's like a little hand with an eye in it. And it's just these like two symbols that the parents like were like, it's devil. But the real reason why the parents think that it's satanic, and no one said this, everyone said it was because of these two symbols, but it's really because there's a person wearing a shirt with a trans flag. There's a person in a hijab, and there's a person wearing a rainbow shirt and rainbow leggings. And there's also just like people of color in general existing on this mural. And that's really the real reason. It's kind of like we talked about SEL last week, social and emotional learning. They're like, I don't want the school teaching my kid social and emotional learning. But really what they don't want the school teaching their kid is that it's okay to use they, them pronouns, or to have brown skin, or to worship Allah. So it's all about Satan and how this mural is satanic and how they're trying to sneak satanic rituals into the school. So there's a few things about this that I want to talk about that I think are so interesting. The first is that it is so revealing of the psyche of this particular kind. And I need to be really careful here to not paint with a broad brush, because we had Crystal Luster on last week who was a great example to us of like the fact that there are Christian people in America right now who understand how to like be Christians in their personal life and not have to make that everyone else's business. Crystal really gets that. And I think that there are others too. But this particular brand of Christianity and of Christian person, this particular type of Christian person who sees a mural like this and genuinely believes that there's something satanic being snuck in or attempted to, you know, get into the schools in front of their kids' eyes, it's really telling of their psyche, because they live in a world where they think that all of us are playing along with their thing. Like, genuinely in their mindset, it's like, well, you're either a Christian and you're on our team and you believe in Jesus Christ and you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, or you're on Satan's team and you are a tool of the devil and you are literally and consciously trying to slip satanic dogma and ritual into policies and laws and murals and Bette Midler movies, and like that this is the genuine agenda of people who are not Christian or who don't identify as Christian. That like really the reality of the world is we all understand and accept their dogma, understand and accept and believe in their religion, but we just are choosing to be on the team of the bad guys, quote unquote, which is just nonsense and not true. And I wish that they understood that it's like, hey, dude, we're not playing. Like, we don't, when they're like, oh, that's Satan, you put a satanic symbol on that thing, it's like, oh no, see, I don't care about that. I don't believe in that guy. That's your thing. And that's fine. That's fine that that's your thing, Crystal Luster, my friend. That's totally fine that that's your thing. But I don't care. Like, that's not my thing. I'm not living my life trying to figure out how to sneak satanic imagery in front of your kids, because I don't care about Satan. Even the satanic church, like the church, the Satanism, doesn't believe in Satan. They're atheists who created a religion to counteract religious tyranny from overreaching Christians who are trying to put their theology into their state legislature and stuff. It's like there are state legislatures that open with an opening prayer. So satanic churches pop up and say, well, if you guys get to open with an opening prayer, religious freedom and respect for religious diversity demands that we also get to open with an opening prayer from time to time. And if you guys get to have the Ten Commandments out in front of state buildings, then we should be able to have satanic commandments out in front of state buildings. These people don't actually believe in Satan. And I wish there's a way to get this particular kind of Christian to understand that it's like, even the people who are adhering to the satanic church don't actually believe that Satan is a real entity or person or force in the world. That's your thing. Their religion exists to just sort of like be a system of checks and balances for you when you try to overreach and when you try to force your beliefs on other people, but they don't actually believe in Satan. That's just, we're not doing it. We're not playing along. That's your thing. So that's the first big thing, is it's like, it's really interesting that in a world of hundreds and thousands of religious beliefs and people who believe all different kinds of things about like what God is, how God functions, what God's role is in the universe, like what the purpose of being alive is. People believe all different kinds of things. These people are so deluded that they think that everyone accepts their narrative and you're either on the good team or the bad team. And that's just not how objective reality functions. So these people are very, very detached in that sense. The second thing I want to talk about just sort of the nature of Satan. Just let's talk about this character and how this character is conceived of and thought about and written about, you know, biblically, like when Satan is mentioned in the Bible and stuff like that. Like just the nature of this character, because this is one of the first things that I started thinking about when I left Mormonism 16 years ago, and when I first started kind of breaking down and unpacking my faith. One of the first things that really fortified my atheism was delving into the nature of this character, Satan. So in Mormonism, I'm going to get a little insider baseball here, but I'm going to let you in on the story. So in Mormonism, there's a thing called the plan of salvation, and the Cliff's Notes version is that in the pre-existence, before Earth existed, before Adam and Eve, before God had the great experiment of like creating a planet and sending people there so that they could have physical bodies that would have spirits and they could like learn and grow, there was a vote held on how that experiment should go. And there were God's two sons, Lucifer and Jesus, presented plans of how that should go. Jesus's plan was that everyone would go down and they would pass through a veil, and their memories of the pre-existence would be wiped. And they would start with a clean slate, and they would have to learn and grow on their own with no memory of God or anything before this life. They would have to learn on their own how to be the right kind of person. And what that means is you would have to figure out some way to get baptized as a Mormon person, or you'd have to do it after you die. You know, it's a pretty narrow window of like what you have to do. But that was Jesus's plan, as everyone would forget. Lucifer's plan said, well, if the whole goal is just to give everyone bodies and make sure that they return to live with God in the life hereafter and that they can grow and become a God, why don't they just remember, like, why don't we just send everyone down there, let them have a body, let them have a more mortal experience, but there's no reason to do the memory wipe thing. Everyone can just, like, remember where they came from, and then they can all go through the process and they can all come back. Which, like, right off the bat, objectively, I'm like, is that not a better plan? Is that not a more like compassionate plan? God is saying that God, the creator of the universe, the omnipotent father of all that is, and all these spirit children, is saying that he wants his spirit children to be able to obtain his level of power. And that the only way they can do that is to obtain a physical body and go through this process of immortal life and then return to him in a spirit form that is somehow transformed or transmuted by this physical body. And then in the eternities after that physical, that mortal, brief mortal life, they can grow into a God themselves. This is like what God wants for his children. Satan's plan is saying like, well, let's just make sure that everybody can do it. Let's just make sure that everybody comes back. Let's make sure that there's no reason why anyone wouldn't come back. And Jesus is like, what if no one remembers what they're supposed to do and it's up to them to figure it out? And if they don't get it right, they don't get to go to heaven. It's like, what? Why? Why? Why are we being so rude? Why are we making it so difficult? I don't get it. Like, what is the point of that? So, God put it to a vote. He put these two opposing plans to a vote, and apparently, 2/3 of the spirit children, 2/3 of all people who have ever existed or whoever will exist in their spirit forms voted for Jesus's plan, and 1/3 voted for Lucifer's plan, and they were all cast out. This is my other favorite part of the story, is that first of all, like, it was such an unpopular plan that, like, that 66% of people were like, No, we're going with the one where our memories are wiped and we have to fend for ourselves to hope to get back here somehow. And only 33% were like, no, I just want to like, I want to come back. I want to be with God again. So that's funny. By the way, everyone that's here, if you're here, if you have a physical body, you're part of the 2/3. You're part of the 2/3 that voted for Jesus's plan. So even if you're going like, I don't know, Satan has a better plan. Sorry, bad news. You voted for Jesus's plan, just to let you know. But my other favorite part is that we kicked them out for having it. First of all, God like opened the floor. He was like, does anybody have any suggestions on how this plan could go? And his two sons were like, I got a plan. And he was like, well, let's hear it. And they each presented their plans. And he was like, eh, sounds good enough. What does everyone think? And 2/3, 66% of the people were like, I like this plan more. And he was like, all right, I think we're going with that plan. And Lucifer, my other son, you need to get the fuck out of here. You and everyone who voted for you need to leave forever. Get out of here for that trash ass plan that you put forward. That was garbage, and you should have thought that through. And I don't want to see your ugly face ever again. Get on out of here. And we fought them, and we had a war because they were like, I don't want to leave. And we were like, you gotta. And we all fought them and threw them out. We chucked them out of heaven for having a different plan, which God said they could have. He was like, who's got an idea? And he didn't say at the beginning, like, by the way, if I don't like your idea, you're going to be cast out of my presence for all eternity. So right off the bat, Satan is a very sympathetic character. That's in Mormon theology. That's the theology that I was raised with. It's pretty similar in the Bible. If you go through the Bible, Satan's constantly doing things that just... from a literary standpoint, he's moving the plot forward. He is literally a protagonistic character, and God is an antagonistic character that at every turn is trying to halt the action of the story. From the very beginning, telling Adam and Eve that they cannot eat that fruit that they have to eat in order for the story to happen is an antagonistic thing. And the serpent coming and being like, well, you have to eat this in order for the story to happen, in order for you guys to be able to leave and make incest babies for several generations. You have to eat this fruit. And God's like, don't do it. Don't do it. The whole time God knows that like they have to. God knows. So, and this happens over and over and over again in the Bible where like, the story of Job. God is being such an antagonistic bully character, and Satan's literally just like, dude, you're a fucking sociopath. Like, you're a bad person. And God's like, yeah, but people still love me. He's like, I'll prove it to you. I can do whatever I want to this guy Job, and he's gonna love me. And Satan's like, you're insane, man. You're fucking crazy. I hope he doesn't love you after you do that stuff to him. And God's like, he's gonna. And Satan's like, yeah, I know he probably will. I'm just saying he shouldn't. And God's like, but want to bet that he will. And Satan's like, I guess, but I'm not going to do anything to him. I'm just going to stand back. And God smites this man several times. He's like, all right, the bet is made. Now stand back and watch me be a total psychopath. And he just like ruins this guy's life in multiple ways. And then comes back to Satan and he's like, he still likes me. And Satan's like, well, congratulations on successfully having your victim have Stockholm syndrome. Like, congratulations on successfully manipulating your abuse victim into loving you. I don't know what you want from me. You're a bad person, God. And it's constantly throughout this story that Satan is like a compassionate character that wants the people to know what's going on. And like, just, he's like, hey, this guy's messing with you and you shouldn't listen to him. And literally they're like, find me an example in the Bible of Satan trying to get someone to do something bad or like trying to get someone to kill someone. Every time there's a voice, an unseen voice that's trying to get someone to kill someone, it's God. It's not like every time there is a unseen voice that is speaking to someone and telling them that they need to commit murder or do something heinous or objectively terrible, it's God. every fucking time. It's not like Satan was like, I hate the people of Earth so much, I'm going to bring a big flood and kill all of them. And God was like, I have to send an angel to help my favorite people. Even in that case, it'd be like, God, just stop Satan from doing the flood. No, Satan was just standing back being like, well, here goes God doing his fucking sociopath shit. Like, I don't know. And I just, like, where in the book, where in any literary reference to this character is he doing anything bad? Again, I need to be really clear, because right now, if there are any of these particular kinds of Christians that I'm addressing watching this podcast, I don't know why they would be, or listening to this podcast, it'd be awesome if you were. Like, I'd be so impressed with you that you made it this far. But if you are here, I know right now it sounds like I'm like defending Satan and sticking up for Satan. I need to make it clear again. I don't believe this is a real person. I don't believe that this is a real entity that actually exists. That's not something I actually care about. I'm just talking about the context in which you believe this is a real person or a real entity. I can't find evidence that this character, which is a big part of your belief system, has ever done anything nearly as heinous as any one of the myriad of terrible things that your God has done. And I just, like, where is the evidence? Jesus was wandering in the desert for 40 days fasting, and Satan tempted Jesus by trying to feed him? Oh no! The terror of this character. I genuinely don't understand this. So first of all, there's that. There's that about, just from a literary standpoint, how is this character the bad guy in the story? He fulfills every role of a protagonistic character. I don't understand in what context you could see this character as the villain of the story. Again, don't believe in him. Don't think he's actually real. And I'm going to get into why I don't think that he's real right now. From a literary standpoint and from a dogmatic standpoint, I don't understand in your belief system why he's a villain. That's the first point. The second point about this character is, like, just functionally and from a motivation standpoint, let's now just suggest that, like, he is evil. And even though, straight out of the text, all of the bad things that happen in the Bible are spurned on and inspired by and sometimes directly carried out by God. So, like, all of the murder and all of the war and all of the, like, terrible stuff, that's all God. God does all that stuff. But let's just say that in the modern world, because in, like, today, the kind of Christians that we're talking about like to attribute things like murderers, Jeffrey Dahmer, serial killers, and just anything that's, like, evil, pedophilia, like, bad things, rape, incest, all this stuff, they like to attribute this to Satanism and to worship of satanic rituals, even though, like, there's nothing in their text that suggests that Satan it has any part in those things. God's always a part of those things, but not Satan. But let's just say that in the modern world, Satan is, he's the bad guy, and he's making people do bad things, and he's inspiring people to do bad things. This is all according to the plan, right? So again, going back to Mormonism, my roots, the plan of salvation, we voted for Jesus's plan. The 2/3 of us, we said, no, I want my memory wiped and I want to go down there and I want to start and just sort of figure shit out in the blind. We voted for this plan, and the plan necessitates that there are good and evil forces acting on us, giving us daily choices between good and evil, and that good is obviously coming from the Spirit of God, the Holy Trinity, you know, God himself, Jesus, whatever, and evil is coming from Satan and the people who are cast out and the sons of perdition and the angels of darkness. They are pulling on us to do evil. But, like, this is the nature of the plan that we chose, the plan that was architected. That's not a word. Architected. Designed. Let's just say, I don't need to get too fancy. Designed by Jesus and God. This plan, it necessitates an adversary. It necessitates a yin to the yang. It necessitates both sides of the coin. Satan is a part of the plan. And I think that this goes along with most of evangelical Christianity and most modern interpretations of Christianity is like, you have to have the other side of the coin. You have to have the evil forces in order for there to be a choice or there to be some kind of moral testing ground for this mortal life. So Satan is a essential aspect of God's plan succeeding and being the way that it is. Meaning, all Satan would have to do to foil God's plan is not participate in it. Do you understand that? All he would have to do is be like, oh, well, I think your plan is kind of like sadistic and weird, and I'm not going to have any part in it. At which point, if he does that, God's hands are tied. If God still wants to carry out the plan as like, well, I got to have these this yin and yang thing, either God needs to use his supreme omnipotent powers to force Satan into the role of being the bad guy, in which case Satan's not really the bad guy. He's there unwillingly as an unwilling participant in God's sick game, or God himself needs to carry out the role of being the tempter and the adversary. If Satan just says, I'm not going to participate in the thing that you're doing, then the whole plan falls apart. Considering that when I first left Mormonism really broke the whole thing wide open for me. I was like, oh, this character that everybody talks about that is so feared, which, by the way, like you could even say, yeah, okay, maybe, but like maybe Satan's ego is so strong, like his will to be right and his will to win is so strong that he's foregoing all of that and he's just trying hope against hope to win, which, by the way, he is winning. By the way, if there is a tug of war between God and Satan and everyone who accepts Jesus is on team God and everybody else is on team Satan, it's just a landslide. Satan's just dominating this game through time, just absolutely crushing it, which is also a huge problem. It's like, why is he so powerful in a universe where God is the creator of the universe and the ultimate supreme power? God's letting himself be undermined by a lesser power, and he's just watching as this power is just absolutely dominating the game. Again, a game that I don't actually believe is taking place. I don't actually believe in this game. I'm talking about in the context of people who do believe the game exists. So he's winning it if there is a game. It's weird that he's playing the game at all, because to actually win it, he could just say, I'm not going to participate. But yeah, I guess we could say, well, maybe, it's this ego thing. He wants the satisfaction of stealing souls and of possessing people and living inside of a mortal body. And he craves that satisfaction. This is I think we're ascribing like pretty petty and emotionally unintelligent characteristics to a being that has extra dimensional powers and that can like move through time and space and that can possess people and take people over. This is a powerful, intelligent being if he exists. If I can figure out, if I'm capable with my little mortal pea brain that passed through the veil and was wiped of all previous knowledge, if I'm able to figure out that there's an easy cheat code to winning this game and it's don't play the game, surely a much, much, much more powerful, much, much, much more intelligent being could figure that out, right? So that's my big thing is like, that's why I don't believe this entity exists. And if it does exist, it's most likely not participating in whatever this is. If by some outlandish chance there really was at some point in some cosmic realm a Jesus and a Satan, or a God and a Satan, a God and a devil who were at odds with each other, and God's way won, and God got to create the universe as God saw fit, and the devil was the bad guy, I don't believe that that character would actually bother to participate in this God's thing, you know? I don't understand why that character would do that. And that's why I don't really believe that that character exists. One of many reasons. I also don't believe that character exists because I don't believe that the god character, as people have conceived of it in their mythology, exists in that literal form. I believe that god energy is something that people feel and that we try to give stories to because that's what we do. We're a storytelling species. But yeah, and that, so yeah. So Christians out there who are freaking out about Satan, we don't believe in your thing. So when you see a mural and you're like, that has a satanic thing on it, we don't, that's not our thing. That's your thing. The vast majority of the world isn't doing your thing. We're not doing your thing. That's your thing. And also, the thing that you're worried about makes no sense. It's a character that makes no literary sense. Your interpretation of this character makes no sense based on the way that it's represented in the text. It just doesn't make any sense, this concept. It doesn't make any sense. I understand that good things and bad things exist. That, like, there are things that happen that we're like, I like that. And there are things that happen that we're like, that's, I don't like that. But I don't think that that's evidence that there's, like, a clove-footed, horned demon. And again, once again, biblically, it was always your God that was doing all the bad things. That's my spiel. Hope that was sufficiently spooky for you. Let's look at the comments and see what we have going on TikTok and YouTube. So T-Bug on YouTube says, if the God that Christians worship actually existed, I still wouldn't worship him because he's an asshole. Yeah. Yeah. I think I can go along with that too. If it all is true, if that's the God from the Old Testament and frankly from the New Testament, and also from the Book of Mormon, if you've never heard about that God's also always telling people to kill people and cut people's limbs off and do a lot of fucked up shit. Like, that's also a sociopath, weird trickster God. If that God exists, like, I'm good. I don't like whatever like eternal reward he's got for me. It's probably like some weird fucked up Hellraiser thing where he's going to like torture you for eternity and be like, don't you like this? Isn't pain good? Because that God is like weirdly obsessed with pain and like gets off on pain and is sort of like a sadomasochist. And he's just like torturing you for all eternity. And he's like, welcome to heaven. Cause he's got some weird twisted like version of what pleasure and what heaven is. So I don't want to go to that place. The character of Satan, if they are real, is a much more appealing character by every metric. T-Bug also says, I'm an atheist, but I used to be a missionary, read the Bible several times, always used to upset me how men would throw their daughters/lovers to mobs to rape them in the Old Testament. Yeah, that's bad. It's not a good thing. And again, it's not Satan that's telling them to do that. Nope. Relief on YouTube says, yeah, the problem with being an all-loving being is you need a foil. Otherwise, you're just a dick. Right. Because if you're an all-knowing and all-loving being, and the world is just rampant with pain and suffering, like, what's that about? But if you can go like, well, there's a bad guy, there's a devil. But again, here's the weird thing, is that all the bad stuff in the religious writing about these characters, everything that we know about these characters concretely comes from the text, comes from the way that they are written about in the text. This character is claiming responsibility for all the bad stuff. So it's just like modern preachers who seem to declare that God is a being of unceasing love. Now, I understand that the character of Jesus in the New Testament does seem to be a character very concerned with love and peace and service. But this character is very incongruous with the character of God, which many religions believe God and Jesus are the same entity. So I just like, it's weird to make the claim that you are all loving or benevolent, but also claim all of these objectively awful, horrific deeds and not put those deeds on. Wouldn't it make more sense to be like, well, the devil came and he made everyone in Sodom and Gomorrah have sex in a way that was bad, and now everyone's dead. The devil killed everyone there. He turned them all to stone. I wanted to stop it, but the devil, which also weird, how come you can't stop it? How come the devil has more power than you? What planet is this? _help from TikTok says, Hank Green's crash course on the Omni-God really helped me understand that fallacies of this God, the fallacies of this God. I'll have to check that out. I really like Hank Green's way of breaking stuff down. Yeah, and Big Baller Barry on TikTok says, you gotta blame the bad stuff on someone. And again, I keep going back to this, but like the modern Christianity likes to blame bad things on Satan. But even then, it's like the bad things they're often talking about is just like trans people existing and stuff, which is like, they're like, it's because of Satan. It's because of Satan that all these kids are changing their pronouns. And it's like, well, that's not a bad thing, first of all. Explain to me how that's bad. Explain to me how that's actually bad, other than you don't like trans people. Explain to me what about that is on the same level of like genocide and murder. Modern Christians like to blame bad things on Satan, but like, not even still, like when a natural disaster happens that kills tons of people, the focus from modern Christians is about like the people that God saved, the homes that he saved, and the people that were miraculously untouched. And it's like, yeah, but wait, so you seem to be saying that God did create the tsunami or hurricane or whatever it was that killed all the people, but that God in his infinite love and infinite mercy spared a handful of homes. I've never heard Christians be like, well, the devil is at work with the weather again. The devil's bringing a hurricane. They're always like, well, you know, God works in mysterious ways. God sends hurricanes and tsunamis and earthquakes places, and we don't know why, but God still spares some people. And it's like, so this thing of like, you got to blame the bad stuff on someone. What bad stuff is getting blamed on Satan, even in the modern context? Everyone seems more than comfortable with giving God the credit for bad things. Dashcam PDX on TikTok says, Letters from the Earth is written from Lucifer's perspective on Earth about people. Sounds like a good, interesting book. I'll have to check that out. Davey on YouTube says, do you think that the people higher up in Christian religion / churches are purposely controlling and shit, or really believe what they're saying? Well, I mean, they absolutely really believe what they're saying. That's for sure. But in that, there also is like an intentionality to purposefully control. I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive. I think that they are very intentional about their purposeful desire to control the behavior of other people, but they are that way because they sincerely believe that they're doing the right thing. So they sincerely believe that it's the right thing to control whether or not a pregnant person can have an abortion. So they sincerely believe that they are morally sustained in taking the action to make sure that a pregnant person cannot seek essential, often life-saving health care. But they are that way because they sincerely believe that they're doing the right thing. And this is why I always talk about ideological pluralism and why it's so important and why I wish more Christian people and more people in general just understood that concept, that like America is an ideologically pluralistic nation. And again, this goes back to the whole thing of like, we don't believe in Satan. Like when you think we're doing satanic stuff, we're not, because that's not our thing. That's not our jam. That's your thing. We are a nation of lots of different beliefs, and most of them don't involve or include your version of Satan. And we've already broken it down, but also your version of Satan or whatever that is really weird. And it doesn't make a lot of sense as to why you think of that character as the bad guy. (clears throat) Yeah, Patrick Kennedy says, it's never the devil that causes weather. It's God punishing us. All the bad stuff is God punishing people. Yeah, they do say that. They'll be like, well, that town is really wicked. There's a lot of, like, homosexuality in that town, and that's why it got hit with that storm. They believe that AIDS was from God, that God was smiting people with AIDS, even though children and straight people were getting AIDS. But they were like, eh, just collateral damage. God had to show the world that he's not cool with that. It's like, what? Like, again, you could have just as easily been like, well, these are people who have been tempted by the devil, and the devil has rewarded them with AIDS. But like, they always attribute these awful things to God. Very strange. Davey on YouTube says, have you ever met someone that questioned their faith and came back to what they originally believed in, or back to some form of God or other religion? Yeah, me. Yeah, I fell away from a very high demand religion, Mormonism, when I was 19, and thought I would never do anything that resembled any kind of organized religion or organized system of thought that related to God or prayer or anything extra dimensional or spiritual ever again. And I spent 11 years as a very determined militant atheist. I think I would even have been happy to die from my alcoholism and drug usage. Because I couldn't find a program of recovery that didn't involve God. And finally, I found myself in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my biggest hurdle to get over in those rooms was that I had a big beef with God and with the idea of God and with the idea of prayer. Now, what I found out in those rooms, and I have no problem sort of saying this on a preliminary basis, is that most people's conception of how Alcoholics Anonymous talks about God is pretty wrong. I would say most atheists, most people who like haven't ever actually spent any considerable amount of time in the rooms of AA, have this idea that AA are like a bunch of Bible thumping people who have a very specific and clearly defined version of what God is and how we should conceive of God, much like many organized religions function. And that's not at all how AA functions in my experience. In my experience, I've been in AA for 4.5 years. I've been sober for 4.5 years, and no one has ever asked me what my God is or how my God functions or like how I conceive of God. It's a personal thing that I am allowed to have a personal relationship with. And my conception of it is something that I think still jives with my atheism. Like, I still am an atheist for pretty much all man-made God stories and myths, but I do have a relationship today with something that I call God, using that word because it's such a universally used word. It's a pretty thick concept to actually get into, because when I say that I have a relationship with God, everyone's like, oh, well, you're not an atheist anymore. And I'm like, I have a relationship with a thing that I call God, just like everyone who has a relationship with the word God really has a relationship with a thing that they call God. They have a specific story that they attribute to that word, but it means so many different things to so many different people. And to me, I think it's very amorphous and hard to describe in words. It's not something I'm really intent on fully understanding. I kind of don't want to give it a too specific story or nature, because I don't really know any of that stuff, and I can't really know any of that stuff, and I'm okay with not knowing that stuff. But what I do know is that pursuing a relationship with that thing, whatever it is, and I have my ideas of what it might be, but pursuing a relationship with it has been beneficial for me and has benefited my life. So I have made a return in my life to something resembling, a structure that many churches have, where it involves prayer, it involves meditation, it involves community gathering, it involves service, it involves ritual, stuff like that. But it's not a belief in a white man with a beard floating on a cloud in space granting wishes. Let's just say that. So. T-Bug says, 52 days sober here, just started. I have a peer mentor, but going to try Smart Recovery this week. Congratulations on 52 days. That's fucking huge. Awesome. Love hearing that. Becca Wow on TikTok says, I usually feel like it's, in quotes, the universe. And yeah, that's what I think. I think that, like, we talked about Satan, so I'll talk about what my conception of God is. I don't think it makes any sense that there is like a, like an anti-God, like a, an evil force. Because I don't think that God is like solely a force of good or evil. I don't necessarily believe that those concepts are like concrete things that can be easily nailed down or defined. I think that God is either everything or nothing. That if God exists, God is literally all that is, which means that you are God, which means that I am God, which means that a rock is God, which means that, you know, the rings of Saturn are God, which means that the space between planets is God. It is the source energy. It is the energy that gives movement and life and electricity to all this stuff. And it's a force and an energy that I believe you can make conscious contact with and tap into. And I believe that that's what people who believe in a more clearly defined dogmatic version of God are tapping into when they pray, or when they pray and say blessings and do things like that. So I think that when people pray and they, you know, when people speak in tongues and when people shake at me, I think that they are tapping into this thing that is universally recognized. I think that the mistake happens when people believe that they have a monopoly on that thing. When they believe that them and their church have a specific relationship with that thing that nobody else has, and that they have a special relationship with it that you can't have. That's horse shit, I think, and not true, and just not the way that this God stuff seems to work just on a universal basis. Just anywhere you go in the world, people seem to understand what that thing is. So it's weird for anyone to be like, no. Only we have it. And everyone else in the world's like, no, I got that. Like, we all got it. We all got some version of it. So Patrick Kennedy says, I'm very much of the opinion that dark matter is a physical manifestation of God. Interesting theory. So I think I could accept that. If I believe that everything is God, why not? And maybe dark matter is a physical manifestation. But I also think that, like, human beings and living creatures are a conscious manifestation of God. There are unconscious aspects of God that are just moving and, you know, moving on a deterministic pathway that this rock only moves if someone picks it up and throws it, that kind of thing. And then there are conscious expressions of God and the universe and conscious appendages. And that's what we are. And maybe dark matter is like a physical form somehow of like that energy. I don't know. I like it. Sounds fun, sounds weird and goopy and hard to define, and that's my jam. I'm into it. Brianna Black says, do you believe there could be beings in the universe that, should they come to us, would be gods to us, like how we are gods from the perspective of a bug? Yeah, I don't know. It depends on the definition of God. This is something I've been exploring this on my social media channels, and I've been exploring it a little bit on the podcast. That just like words, words are really fun if you get curious about them. So, like, when we're talking about the word God right now, there's so many different things that we could be talking about. There's so many different interpretations that we could be taking. We talk about it as though everyone's on the same page and everyone knows what we mean when we say God. But of course, that's not the case. Everyone has a very individualized conception of what this word entails and what it represents. So, like, gods... Yeah, in like an ancient Greek sense, in like a superhero sense, there could be beings that could arrive that are capable of such technological or physical feats that to us, they possess the power of the ancient gods that were written about in our ancient literature or in comic books and things like that. But like, is that the same thing as an omnipotent being that is everything and everywhere? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think philosophically that's the same thing. So what we're talking about is just like super strong beings or very large beings or super intelligent beings or some combination of the three. But is that what a god is? That's what gods were in ancient Greece. that's, you know, that's how gods are described again in like superhero movies and stuff like, so like, yeah, of course beings like that could exist. And they probably do. In fact, there's a very good chance that our entire universe is just cell structure on the back of a giant being that, exists in a larger universe of larger giant beings, and that size just keeps going out and out and out and bigger and bigger and bigger. And, but I don't know that that makes that giant being a god. I think that, what you find out is that size becomes kind of irrelevant, that like, just like you said, what we are to bugs, that we're just this unfathomably large thing that they probably can't even fully conceive of. And that's what a bug, that's what we are to a bug, is this very large thing. But just like how, like, we can't, we're not even perceivable when it comes to the size of like Jupiter. And then Jupiter is not even perceivable when it comes to the size of the Milky Way galaxy. And I don't know. But this is also interesting. It's just an interesting exploration of the word God and what we could be talking about, when we're talking about it. So Dashcam PDX offers a definition: an omnipotent being whose power can be thwarted by modern medicine. Or I don't know if that's a definition that you're offering, but I don't know. Maybe I missed a message somewhere. Brianna Black says, we could all be fooled by a higher being in a belief that it is God. Sure. Yeah. If God is a singular being and not everything, and it is a being of great unfathomable power, yeah, it's totally possible that that being could just be toying with us and messing with us. And if God is the way that God is written about in the Bible, in the Book of Mormon, is the way that God is conceived of by most modern Christians, then I would say that that God is toying with us and is using its power irresponsibly to weirdly, sadistically toy with us. So, yeah, totally possible. Patrick Kennedy says, it's turtles all the way down. Yeah, that theory that we're all on the back of a giant tortoise, and it's just turtles up and up and up and down and down and down. Yeah, sure. Why not? Why not? Could be. Fun conversation, huh? I thought that was pretty solid. I thought that went pretty well. I think that we persuaded at least two deeply passionate and believing Christians to reconsider their satanic panic. Hopefully. Satan's not real, and even if Satan is real, we don't believe in Satan, and we're not doing any of the stuff that we're doing because of Satan, because we don't actually believe in it. Even the Satanic Church, they don't actually believe in Satan. You don't need to worry about Satan. Just go out and wear a fun Halloween costume, don't wear a racist one, and get some candy, or go to a party, and have a good time. I think that's it. That's it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. That's my Bandcamp. You can buy my music there. You should. Patreon.com/austinarcher if you want to support this show or the content that I make. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. Love you all so much. You're the best. Have a fun Halloween. Have a happy Halloween, and I'll see you next week, and I love you so much, and take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye. If anyone-